Task 1. You now have 1 minute to look at task 1.
The Youth Hostel Association started in the 1930s, and since then the organisation has continued to provide low-cost accommodation for millions of people travelling around. I asked Colin Brown, a representative of the YHA, for an update on the hostel situation. Colin, first of all, is it true that the hostels aren't as good as they used to be?
Well, if you're asking me about quality, I'd say, and most would agree with me, that the opposite is the case. The original hostels were pretty tough places to stay in. No hot water, hard floors and beds.
But people argue that hostel travellers don't want fluffy carpets and matching curtains, and that this goes against the original aims of the organisation.
Well, all I can say is that these criticisms have no basis in fact. We know what we're doing. We do market research, we talk to a random selection of people who regularly stay in hostels, and the results show that we're getting it right.
But if you look back to the 30s and 40s, when the organisation started, the general philosophy was very different, wasn't it?
I think the important thing to remember is that we aren't in the 1940s anymore. Teenagers don't travel around on their own as much as they did then, because parents no longer consider it safe. Our hostels are still full, but things have changed. Visitors now are often young families with children, couples on restricted budgets, people who care about the environment and are pretty green.
How has this affected hostel rules and regulations?
Well, we have to market the YHA to be competitive in the 21st century. Rules have become more flexible to accommodate the different types of hostel and their visitors. Sometimes there's no rule about what time you have to be back at night, for example, but not in all hostels. And we still have large open-plan dormitories, which not everyone wants.
So you've switched really from just offering basic self-service-style accommodation to being more of a service organisation, like a hotel.
Yes, and it's a reflection of what people want. You should see my postbag. For every member who writes to say, it's not like it used to be, we get a pile of letters saying, this is great. If we'd stuck to the old ways, there wouldn't be a YHA. There'd be a few hostels with a small membership of ageing hostelers with no newcomers and no future.
Colin, can we talk a little about rural hostels? I know you've had to close some of these. How do you decide when to close a hostel?
There are any number of reasons for closing a hostel. Leases run out, buildings become uneconomic, visiting patterns change. The general policy is to consider closing hostels which are significantly below standard, particularly in terms of safety, where the remedial work required would be very expensive.
It seems odd to be closing them down when I know a lot of companies in this type of business are doing just the opposite.
It's true. I do get lots of inquiries, more every year, from people who want to set up a hostel or a chain of hostels. And I suppose I do wonder sometimes if we might end up with more hostels than the market can cope with. Take the island of Skye in Scotland, for example. 10 years ago, there were 20 hostels there. Now there are over 500.
Now you'll hear part 4 again.
The Youth Hostel Association started in the 1930s, and since then the organisation has continued to provide low-cost accommodation for millions of people travelling around. I asked Colin Brown, a representative of the YHA, for an update on the hostel situation. Colin, first of all, is it true that the hostels aren't as good as they used to be?
Well, if you're asking me about quality, I'd say, and most would agree with me, that the opposite is the case. The original hostels were pretty tough places to stay in. No hot water, hard floors and beds.
But people argue that hostel travellers don't want fluffy carpets and matching curtains, and that this goes against the original aims of the organisation.
Well, all I can say is that these criticisms have no basis in fact. We know what we're doing. We do market research, we talk to a random selection of people who regularly stay in hostels, and the results show that we're getting it right.
But if you look back to the 30s and 40s, when the organisation started, the general philosophy was very different, wasn't it?
I think the important thing to remember is that we aren't in the 1940s anymore. Teenagers don't travel around on their own as much as they did then, because parents no longer consider it safe. Our hostels are still full, but things have changed. Visitors now are often young families with children, couples on restricted budgets, people who care about the environment and are pretty green.
How has this affected hostel rules and regulations?
Well, we have to market the YHA to be competitive in the 21st century. Rules have become more flexible to accommodate the different types of hostel and their visitors. Sometimes there's no rule about what time you have to be back at night, for example, but not in all hostels. And we still have large open-plan dormitories, which not everyone wants.
So you've switched really from just offering basic self-service-style accommodation to being more of a service organisation, like a hotel.
Yes, and it's a reflection of what people want. You should see my postbag. For every member who writes to say, it's not like it used to be, we get a pile of letters saying, this is great. If we'd stuck to the old ways, there wouldn't be a YHA. There'd be a few hostels with a small membership of ageing hostelers with no newcomers and no future.
Colin, can we talk a little about rural hostels? I know you've had to close some of these. How do you decide when to close a hostel?
There are any number of reasons for closing a hostel. Leases run out, buildings become uneconomic, visiting patterns change. The general policy is to consider closing hostels which are significantly below standard, particularly in terms of safety, where the remedial work required would be very expensive.
It seems odd to be closing them down when I know a lot of companies in this type of business are doing just the opposite.
It's true. I do get lots of inquiries, more every year, from people who want to set up a hostel or a chain of hostels. And I suppose I do wonder sometimes if we might end up with more hostels than the market can cope with. Take the island of Skye in Scotland, for example. 10 years ago, there were 20 hostels there. Now there are over 500.
Now turn to task two.
You'll hear part of a recorded guided tour which is given to people visiting a wildlife park. For questions 9 to 18, complete the sentences. You now have 45 seconds in which to look at part two. Welcome to Burton Safari Park. This cassette has been made so that you can listen to a guided tour as you drive round the wildlife park in your car. Burton is one of Europe's oldest wildlife parks.
Here you can see wild animals from all over the world, and they're not in cages. Before we start, we do have some information for the animals' safety and for your own. First, please stay in your car at all times. In case of emergency or breakdown, please use your horn and lights and a ranger will come and help you. If you'd like to stop, please do so on the left side of the road, allowing traffic to pass on the right. Please do not feed the animals. Our animals are fed on special diets, and your leftover picnic might make them ill or even kill them. We're starting our tour with some of Burton's most interesting wild animals, our four white rhinos from South Africa. The white rhino doesn't get its name from its colour. The African word white means wide, and the white rhino has a wide mouth which helps it eat grasses. Sadly, there aren't many rhinos left in the world today. Poachers hunt rhinos for their horns, which can be made into things like handles for knives. Burton's oldest animals are two female rhinos, Maggot and Mary. They've been here since the park opened 30 years ago. They're great friends and could live to be 40. Head keeper Anne Stewart has worked with rhinos and other large animals at Burton for 20 years.
Rhinos can be dangerous. These ones here have been here a long time, so they know me and I know them. Their hearing's excellent, but their eyesight is poor, so it's important that I talk, and then they recognise my voice and they're okay with me.
Anne has noticed how intelligent the rhinos are. They can tell the vet's Volvo car from any other Volvo and become suspicious if a car is not going round the normal route.
One of the keepers has a special but dangerous job, checking the rhino's toes. There are three toes on each foot and they have to be checked regularly in case they get damaged. There are two male rhinos, Harold and Arthur, who came to Burton from the north of England. Harold in particular can get quite angry at times. Their keeper says sometimes rhinos might want to have a little rub on the side of your car. It's because it's a convenient place to scratch themselves, but it's nothing to worry about, really. Just drive out of the way and keep clear of them if they look as though they're going to use your car in this way. If you can't move, sound the horn and someone will come and rescue you.
White rhinos spend most of their time eating when they're not sleeping or taking a mud bath. The rhino's diet is mostly grass and sugar. The keepers make a special mixture for them, which they seem to enjoy very much. They have a good life, really. And now, let's move on to the other side of the...
Now you'll hear part two again.
Welcome to Burton Safari Park. This cassette has been made so that you can listen to a guided tour as you drive round the wildlife park in your car. Burton is one of Europe's oldest wildlife parks. Here you can see wild animals from all over the world, and they're not in cages. Before we start, we do have some information for the animals' safety and for your own. First, please stay in your car at all times. In case of emergency or breakdown, please use your horn and lights and a ranger will come and help you. If you'd like to stop, please do so on the left side of the road, allowing traffic to pass on the right. Please do not feed the animals. Our animals are fed on special diets, and your leftover picnic might make them ill or even kill them. We're starting our tour with some of Burton's most interesting wild animals, our four white rhinos from South Africa. The white rhino doesn't get its name from its colour. The African word white means wide, and the white rhino has a wide mouth which helps it eat grasses. Sadly, there aren't many rhinos left in the world today. Poachers hunt rhinos for their horns, which can be made into things like handles for knives. Burton's oldest animals are two female rhinos, Maggot and Mary. They've been here since the park opened 30 years ago. they're great friends, and could live to be 40. Head keeper, Anne Stewart, has worked with rhinos and other large animals at Burton for 20 years.
Rhinos can be dangerous. These ones here have been here a long time, so they know me and I know them. Their hearing's excellent, but their eyesight is poor, so it's important that I talk, and then they recognise my voice and they're okay with me.
Anne has noticed how intelligent the rhinos are. They can tell the vet's Volvo car from any other Volvo and become suspicious if a car is not going round the normal route.
One of the keepers has a special but dangerous job, checking the rhino's toes. There are three toes on each foot and they have to be checked regularly in case they get damaged. There are two male rhinos, Harold and Arthur, who came to Burton from the north of England. Harold in particular can get quite angry at times. Their keeper says sometimes rhinos might want to have a little rub on the side of your car. It's because it's a convenient place to scratch themselves, but it's nothing to worry about, really. Just drive out of the way and keep clear of them if they look as though they're going to use your car in this way. If you can't move, sound the horn and someone will come and rescue you.
White rhinos spend most of their time eating when they're not sleeping or taking a mud bath. The rhino's diet is mostly grass and sugar. The keepers make a special mixture for them, which they seem to enjoy very much. They have a good life, really. And now, let's move on to the other side of the...
That's the end of part 2.